We all know blood is vital, right? But have you ever really stopped to think about just how incredibly complex it is? How it manages everything, lifeline, defense, even repairs.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff.
Today, we're going to really dig into that. We're looking at a fantastic lecture from Dr. Ty C.M. Hoffman that unpacks the whole circulatory system and honestly clears up some things most of us probably get wrong.
Absolutely. Our mission here is basically to pull out the key takeaways from Dr. Hoffman's insights. Think of it as a shortcut to getting, you know, properly informed about this stuff. And he kicks things off right away by tackling a common mix-up.
Oh, yeah, the circulatory system versus the cardiovascular system. I think most people use them interchangeably. I know I probably did. But Dr. Hoffman draws a really clear line.
He does, and his precision is really helpful. He points out that cardiovascular, well, it only means the heart and the blood vessels. You know, cardio for heart, vascular for vessels. And crucially, blood isn't part of that cardiovascular definition, which means technically the cardiovascular system isn't a complete organ system by itself.
Okay, so that's the cardiovascular bit. What's the full picture then, according to Dr. Hoffman?
The full system, the heart, the vessels, and the blood working together. That's what Dr. Hoffman correctly labels the circulatory system. And he splits his lecture on it into two parts. We're starting with blood today.
And one of the first things that really jumped out at me from Dr. Hoffman's lecture, right when he starts talking about blood, is how he classifies it. Not just as a fluid, but actually as a type of connective tissue.
Yeah, that might sound a bit strange at first.
It does, yeah. Because you think of bone or cartilage.
Exactly. But remember, connective tissues generally have like two main parts, the cells and the stuff around the cells, the extracellular matrix. Dr. Hoffman shows how blood fits this perfectly.
Okay, how so?
Well, the cellular part, that's what he calls the formed elements, and the liquid matrix around them, that's the plasma. He even compares it to bone, a wholly different texture, obviously, but structurally similar components, cells plus matrix.
Got it. So these formed elements, Dr. Hoffman says they make up a bit less than half of your blood volume, and that includes the actual blood cells and also platelets.
Right. And he breaks down those formed elements. You've got your red blood cells, erythrocytes. They're the most common by far. Then the white blood cells, leukocytes, your immune defenders. And then platelets.
And platelets are kind of weird, right? Not quite cells.
Exactly what Dr. Hoffman points out. They're fragments. They start from cells, but they break up. And importantly, they don't have a nucleus.
Okay, so that leaves the other half, roughly the plasma, the extracellular matrix. Dr. Hoffman says it's mostly water.
Yeah, about 90% water. But it's not just water. It's full of dissolved stuff, salts, which are electrolytes, and these crucial plasma proteins he talks about.
And plasma does a lot of carrying things around, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Dr. Hoffman really details its transport role. It's like the body's super highway. It carries nutrients, glucose, fatty acids, vitamins, amino acids everywhere. Picks up waste, like urea, carries oxygen to cells, CO2 away from them. And hormones travel in plasma too, though. As he reminds us, they only work on cells with the right receptors.
All right, let's focus on those red blood cells for a minute. Because Dr. Hoffman highlights something really unusual about them.
You mean the nucleus?
Exactly. Most cells have one, but red blood cells don't. And Dr. Hoffman explains why. It's pretty clever, actually. It's to maximize space.
Space for hemoglobin, right. That protein that carries the oxygen.
Precisely. Pack in as much hemoglobin as possible.
But that lack of a nucleus has a consequence, doesn't it? Dr. Hoffman mentions this.
It does. They can't repair themselves or replicate easily, so they don't live very long. You're losing and making millions, literally millions, every day.
It's an incredible turnover.
So hemoglobin's job, Dr. Hoffman describes it as reversible binding.
Yeah, that's the key. It grabs onto oxygen in the lungs, lets it go at the cells that need it, then picks up carbon dioxide from the cells and drops that off back in the lungs so you can breathe it out. Perfect little shuttle.
And really hammer home how important protein shape is, Dr. Hoffman uses sickle cell disease as an example.
It's a powerful one. He explains how just a single tiny change in the DNA code.
Just one letter.
One nucleotide, yeah. Leads to one wrong amino acid being put into the hemoglobin protein chain. And that one tiny error changes the entire shape of the hemoglobin molecule.
Which then changes the shape of the whole red blood cell, making it that sickle shape.
Exactly. And Dr. Hoffman really stresses this point. For proteins, shape is everything. That tiny genetic mistake, that one different amino acid, causes huge problems with how well oxygen and CO2 get transported. It really shows how vital that molecular structure is.
Okay, so red blood cells are the transporters. What about the white blood cell, the leukocytes? Dr. Hoffman notes there are way fewer of them, but they're obviously critical for defense.
Absolutely. He breaks them down into two main groups based on how they look with stains under a microscope. First, you have the granulocytes.
Granulocytes.
These include neutrophils. They're the most numerous white blood cell. And they're phagocytes, meaning they literally eat invaders, the first responders. Then eosinophils, which deal more with parasitic worms and allergic reactions. And basophils, they release histamine, which you know from allergies causing inflammation. And also heparin, which stops clotting.
And the second group.
Those are the granulocytes. No granules, basically. This includes monocytes. These are the biggest white blood cells, and they actually leave the bloodstream to become sort of heavy-duty cleanup crews, phagocytes out in the tissues.
Okay.
And then the really famous ones, lymphocytes. These are key for adaptive immunity, the body learning to fight specific threats. Dr. Hoffman mentions the main types, B cells and T cells. T cells mature in the thymus gland. B cells make antibodies. Very sophisticated defense.
We mentioned platelets earlier, being formed elements but not full cells. Let's loop back to them. They're tiny, but Dr. Hoffman says there are loads of them.
Yeah, huge numbers, 150,000 to 400,000 per cubic millimeter. Tiny but mighty. Their main job, as Dr. Hoffman really emphasizes, is in hemostasis.
Hemostasis, that means stopping bleeding, right?
Exactly. Hmm. The body's process for stopping blood loss. Platelets are absolutely central to forming blood clots. They're the emergency patch kit.
So with all these different specialized blood parts, where do they actually come from? Dr. Hoffman brings up stem cells.
Right. Stem cells are amazing. He defines them as cells that can develop into several different types of cells. Most normal cells just make copies of themselves, but stem cells are versatile. It's like they haven't decided their career path yet.
Okay. And the ones for blood.
Dr. Hoffman identifies them as hemocytoblasts. Or you might hear hematopoietic stem cells, and they live in the red marrow inside your bones.
Okay, red bone marrow. And the process of making blood cells is called?
Hemopoiesis. Dr. Hoffman explains that when these hemocytoblasts get the right chemical signal, they divide. One daughter cell stays as a stem cell. Got to keep the supply going, right?
Makes sense.
The other one starts differentiating. It can become a myeloid stem cell, which leads to most types. The granulocytes, monocytes, platelets, and red blood cells. Or it can become a lymphoid stem cell, which makes the lymphocytes.
And Dr. Hoffman gives a specific example of this regulation, doesn't he? With red blood cell production.
Yes, erythropoiesis. And he explains how it's beautifully controlled, mainly by the kidneys, using a classic negative feedback loop. It's a great example of homeostasis.
How does that work?
Okay, so if your blood oxygen level drops, maybe you lost blood, or you're at high altitude, or maybe you don't have enough hemoglobin, your kidneys sense this drop.
They can tell. Wow.
Yeah, they sense it. And in response, they release a hormone called erythropoietin, or EPO. This hormone travels through the blood to the red bone marrow.
And tells the stem cells.
Tells those hemocytoblasts, essentially, hey, we need more oxygen carriers, so they ramp up red blood cell production. More red blood cells mean more oxygen carrying capacity, so oxygen levels go back up. Once they're normal, the kidneys stop releasing so much EPO. See? Negative feedback.
That is incredibly efficient. A self-regulating system.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, back to hemostasis stopping bleeding. You said platelets are key. Dr. Hoffman explains it happens in steps when a vessel gets damaged.
That's right. He lays out three clear steps. Step one is immediate vascular spasm.
It sounds painful.
Well, it's effective. The instant a vessel tears, the exposed tissue sends signals to the smooth muscle in the vessel wall. That muscle contracts forcefully.
So it clamps down.
Precisely. It causes vasoconstriction. The vessel narrows right at the injury site. It physically squeezes down to reduce blood flow out. Dr. Hoffman compares it to a surgeon using a clamp. Instant damage control.
Okay, step one, clamp down. What's step two?
Step two is platelet plug formation. Now, normally, platelets just float along, ignoring each other. But when there's an injury, chemicals are released at the site.
Signals.
Yeah, distress signals. These make the platelets sticky. They start sticking to the damaged vessel wall and, crucially, to each other. They pile up and form a temporary plug. Dr. Hoffman makes the point, though this plug is quick, but it's kind of weak. It's like a temporary patch.
So not the final fix.
Not the final fix. That's step three. Coagulation. This is the process of forming a proper blood clot. Dr. Hoffman explains it involves a protein normally dissolved in your plasma called fibrinogen.
Fibrinogen.
Okay, it's usually inactive, but during coagulation, an enzyme called thrombin converts this soluble fibrinogen into an insoluble protein called fibrin.
insoluble, so it comes out of solution.
Exactly. And fibrin molecules then link together to form long, sticky threads. These threads create a meshwork, like a net.
I see. And that catches things.
It does. It traps red blood cells, more platelets, white blood cells, everything, creating a much stronger, more stable clot that really seals the break in the vessel.
That's the real deal.
That's the real deal. And Dr. Hoffman adds that this clot actually continues to contract and harden over time. Then, eventually, once the vessel wall underneath has repaired itself, the body has mechanisms to dissolve the clot. It cleans up after itself.
Amazing. From injury to repair to cleanup. Okay, let's switch gears slightly to something super important. Blood typing. Specifically, the ABO group. Dr. Hoffman says this one's famous because mistakes can be deadly.
Yeah, absolutely. Critical knowledge. He explains it boils down to two main things, antigens and antibodies. Antigens are like little identification markers, usually proteins on the surface of your red blood cells.
Like name tags.
Sort of, yeah. And antibodies are proteins floating in your plasma that are designed to recognize specific antigens, usually foreign ones. Dr. Hoffman uses the vaccine analogy. A vaccine introduces an antigen, so your body makes antibodies against it.
Okay. So for the ABO system, what are the antigens?
Dr. Hoffman explains there are two main ones, the A antigen and the B antigen. These are proteins on the red cell membrane, and your genes determine which ones, if any, you have.
So that leads to the different blood types.
Exactly. He breaks it down really clearly. Type AB blood. You have both A and B antigens on your red cells, and crucially, you have no anti-A or anti-B antibodies in your plasma.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you'd attack your own blood.
Self-preservation.
Type B blood. You have B antigens on your cells, so you have anti-A antibodies in your plasma. Type A blood. You have A antigens, so you have anti-B antibodies in your plasma. Type O blood. You have neither A nor B antigens on your red cells. Because you lack these antigens, you have both anti-A and anti-B antibodies in your plasma.
Got it. A has A antigens, anti-B antibodies. B has B antigens, anti-A antibodies. AB has both antigens, no antibodies. O has no antigens, both antibodies.
You got it. And this setup, as Dr. Hoffman stresses, is why blood compatibility is so vital for transfusions.
Right, because if you give someone the wrong type,
their antibodies will attack the donated red blood cells. The antibodies bind to the antigens on the foreign cells, causing them to clump up and break down, which can be catastrophic.
This brings up the whole universal donor and universal recipient thing. Mm-hmm. Dr. Hoffman clarifies this, right? Because it's not always straightforward.
It's not quite as simple as the name suggests. Type AB is called the universal recipient for red blood cells. Why? Because an AB person has no anti-A or anti-B antibodies in their plasma to attack any donated red cells, AB, AB, or O.
Okay, but only for the cells?
Only for packed red cells, yes. Mm-hmm. If they received whole blood from, say, a type A person, that donated plasma would contain anti-B antibodies, which would attack the recipient's B antigens. So whole blood needs a closer match.
Ah, okay. And the universal donor, type O.
Type O is the universal donor for red blood cells. Their red cells have no A or B antigens, so there's nothing for the recipient's antibodies to attack. That's why O negative is so valuable in emergencies when there's no time to type the patient.
But again, just the cells.
Just the cells, ideally. Type O plasma contains both anti-A and anti-B antibodies, which would attack AB or AB red cells if given as whole blood. So the universal labels really apply best to just the red cell component. Dr. Hoffman makes that distinction clear.
That clears up a lot. So how do labs actually test your blood type? Dr. Hoffman described the process.
It's actually pretty straightforward. They take a sample of your blood and mix it with solutions containing known antibodies, one with anti-A antibodies, one with anti-B antibodies.
And they just watch what happens.
Exactly. They look for agglutination, which is just a fancy word for clumping. If your blood clumps when mixed with the anti-A serum, it means you have A antigens on your cells. If it clumps with anti-B, you have B antigens.
So if it clumps with both, you're AB. If it clumps with neither, you're O.
Precisely. It's a quick visual test that tells them exactly what antigens are present, and therefore your ABO blood type. Essential information.
Wow. It's incredible when you break it all down. We started just thinking about blood, and Dr. Hoffman's lecture took us through, precise definitions, the different cells, how they're made, how the body stops leaks, and this whole complex antigen-antibody system for blood types.
It really is deep, and understanding it, like Dr. Hoffman lays it out, gives you such an appreciation for how complex and, frankly, elegant our bodies are. The level of coordination and regulation is just mind-boggling.
It truly is. So here's something to think about. When you consider the sheer numbers, millions of red blood cells per tiny drop, each packed with millions of hemoglobin molecules, and the fact that your body makes and destroys millions every second, all perfectly regulated by things like EPO from your kidneys. What does that tell you about your body's unbelievable power for self-management, constantly working beneath the surface? Just something to ponder. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Dr. Hoffman's insights.